What's up, guys? Hope this message finds you well. In this episode, I sit down with Aaron Zach. He's a co-founder at Revolving Mind Media. It's a digital agency that helps businesses and brands scale. They also work with a wide range of NFL and NBA athletes, helping them take their personal brand off the field and off the court to the next level. So I'm very excited to share this episode with you guys. He has an inspiring story, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Cheers.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Welcome to another episode of the Tomas Show. Today, my guest is dear friend Aaron Zach. He's a co-founder of Revolving Mind Media and also an NFL marketing agent, which is something that I would love to dive into here in a little bit. But first and foremost, welcome, Aaron.
Thank you so much for having me, Tomas.
How are you, man?
It's awesome. Everything's great. Just got off the holiday weekend and we're rolling forward.
I remember meeting you for the first time, and I've always admired you for your level of energy and enthusiasm and just how organic and authentic you are. And you know, when I was thinking about it, it was a no-brainer to have you on the show. Apologize that it's taking me so long, but I guess you have to get married and do other things. And
hey, if I'm on the C list, it's okay. It's
whatever. No, but you have such a great story, man. And I wanted to provide it obviously for the benefit of the audience. So let's start, kind of with the first question. It is my understanding you were born and raised here. I do a lot of conversation around education and kind of your career moving forward. So how did you walk us through your upbringings, and how did you end up choosing the college that you went to?
Yeah, no. So my start, I started off working in the clothing industry and the apparel industry around the age of 10. So I was leaving middle school, going to my father's store, and really soaking up knowledge, observing how he talked to people, his styles of selling, and really just overall people skills. So that's where I started around the age of 10. I grew up on loving sports. That was instilled from pretty much I felt like at birth.
For sure.
And so I was, reading the sports page every day, watching the Dallas sports teams in the evening. So I developed a really strong passion for sports. But then when I looked in the mirror, I didn't have the skill set like yourself to be a professional athlete. So I had to get onto the football field a different way. So my avenue, and at the age of 13, I told my parents I was going to be an NFL sports agent. That was my angle. That was my avenue. I was a trainer for the football and basketball teams throughout high school. I played football up until ninth grade, and then I moved on to becoming a trainer. And it was just about being around the camaraderie that's in a locker room, which obviously you can attest to, that there's really nothing else like it. You don't get that camaraderie in an office space. It's just a completely different level. So my whole focus was going to one of the top sports management schools in the country. Only applied to Texas and Florida. They had two of the top five sports management programs in the country. And when it was all said and done, I wanted to just get away from Dallas, but within a quick drive. So got into Florida. I said, I'm going to go to Texas. So right then and there, I focused on a sports management major with a business minor. I knew that would allow me that education to continue going towards being an NFL agent.
Yeah.
And my mother also went to UT. So I was born and raised a Longhorn, continued Longhorn on family. For sure. We're a Longhorn family. And it was just far enough away from home where I could still get home, but where my parents weren't dropping in on the weekends or anything
for
like
sure.
that.
No, it sounds like, it's a, you already knew pretty early on what you want to do in your life, which I think for a lot of kids, teenagers, it's such a difficult task because we have, so many distractions. What helped you, think, refine kind of your path so quickly and be so precisely focused and say, okay, those are my two colleges and this is my, field of study that I'll pursue?
It's a little bit from within of knowing, setting out for an objective and just going for it, not diverting, knowing what I was passionate about. And I really just stayed the course. you're 100% right. I think 75% of my friends switched majors and ended up going 4.5, 5 years. I knew my father was paying for, very fortunate. He was paying for my undergraduate degree and my housing. Two fantastic things, but I also knew I had to work throughout college if I wanted to do anything else. So starting off at the age of 10, I was always working. I was always bringing in money, even throughout high school. I had a work program study where I was working after school. So the work ethic side really was instilled into me at a very early age. And then just knowing where I wanted to get allowed me to really just stay the course. I knew I had to get my undergraduate degree to then get to my MBA, to then become an NFL agent. So that's how I was able to become the youngest NFL agent in the business, as I just never wavered. I knew I had 4 years to graduate, and if I didn't finish in 4 years, it was going to fall on my expense. So it was a lot really financially mixed with what was inner, developed within me at a very, very early age of just going after that goal and getting it.
So self-realization mix with passion. Or reflection with some expectations from your parents, great upbringings, the whole nine yards.
And being passionate about something also helped, right? I wasn't just getting a bland degree that I wasn't passionate about. I was firmly soaking up everything I was learning throughout the classes to make myself a better person.
How was your experience? You've mentioned something that I didn't know is how was your experience being a trainer? Working for different teams, was it just basketball or different sports?
I did basketball and football. And it was awesome. I was around the locker room. I was listening to the coaches. I was listening to the players' feedback. I was on the sideline. So by nature, I was in the game without being in the game.
I think it's such a, the reason why I bring this up is because I genuinely believe it's such a undervalued role or perhaps job, specifically at a young age, because we as athletes, we're fortunate to have scholarships, but there is a team of staff that is supporting you at all times, whether it's medical trainers, basketball trainers, whether it's, obviously different coaches, etc. So at the end of the day, I think from my experience, at least, a lot of those guys and ladies too, we had some trainers, they short sell themselves, and I always couldn't believe why, because it's such, you're a member of the team, you're letter in your particular gig, and if to your well, we both have a background in marketing, you probably have more expertise, but it's how you market that, right, than to your employer and everything else.
It's very similar to us in the business world today, right? My agency is nothing without my staff. Right, I might be able to bring on clients. I might have a much stronger network than my employees, but things aren't getting done without my staff. It's the same, you look at, when a team wins a Super Bowl or, NBA championship, who gets the rings? It's the entire staff. Yes, it's the trainers, it's the back office, it's the mailman inside the stadium. So it's really everyone that shows, it's a team mentality to make the machine run.
Gotcha. How was your experience with the around the sports management program at UT, at SMU, my alma mater, love SMU, obviously. However, as valuable of that degree that it is, and I think today is way more valuable when, we would go to college. But I think a lot of folks, a lot of athletes specifically, would choose that field at the time because it was easy, because it was something that they didn't perhaps have to, it wasn't a business degree like, oh my God, I have to do all this math and complex, class taking and whatnot. It was perceived, at least, wrongfully so in my mind, even at the time, that a path that you would have a difficult, perhaps, path to transition to life after sports. How was your experience and what do you think about that sports management field as a whole?
So I think when I was applying, I was targeting two of the top five schools that had developed the curriculum. When I was there, a lot of schools offered sports management, but the curriculum wasn't built out at all.
I see.
Mine was, it was good. I wouldn't say over 50% of the classes I apply to my day-to-day work right now. I will say my business minor helped diversify my skill set. And the major also had a kinesiology component, so it was kinesiology sports management. So I was able to learn a lot about the functionality of and health of the body, which allows me today to have those health conversations with my NFL or NBA clients. So, you know, the sports management side was more overlying business. There was sports law. There was a business plan that I put together, and it was pre Top Golf, but it was a putt-putt concept of Top Golf. Yeah. I wish I would have jumped on that business opportunity because it was a whole semester business plan, but I actually utilized that business plan when putting together the foundational aspects of Revolving Mind Media. So, you know, I won't say, you know, it was the strongest degree in helping me on my day to day, but it was pretty built out at UT, and that business minor helped me out.
How do you look from an athletics perspective and, you know, student athletes studying sports management? How would you assess the potential to then successfully transition, you know, because we both know below 1% athletes go to the pros, doesn't matter what discipline. How successful could you be if you study sports management as a student athlete or as a, you know, regular student? What are some of the career choices, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, I think number one is knowing where you want to go with the degree. I would say a business degree or a communications degree might be a little more versatile than a sports management degree. It's very niche, and it has the appeal. You know, there's so many individuals that want to become an agent, but people don't know that when you take your NFL agent test, it actually has a lower pass rate than people taking the bar exam.
Wow.
When I took it, it was a 39% pass rate. Out of the 200 plus agents that were individuals that were trying to become agents. So I think there's a little bit of a stigma on just wanting to be in sports on individuals that are getting the sports management major without that direction. You know, for a sports management major, you can go into sports marketing. You can go into the sports agency route. There are some sports marketing classes. So, you know, a marketing segmentation. And you can utilize the sports management degree not only in sports if you utilize, you know, the marketing side and those business law classes and different things like that. But it's definitely more niche than an overlying just communications or business degree.
I feel like, you know, student athletes sometimes, whether it's their choice or maybe that's, you know, but in majority cases, it's their choice what they will major in, but they perhaps prefer the easy route and like, okay, let me do this major or sociology or whatever, as opposed to, you know, pushing themselves even further and like, hey, I can play sports, but then if I also study X, it will be more than likely I could be in a better shape when I graduate as opposed to if I, you know, study this degree. Because they don't know where they're going.
Right? I agree. And I think, you know, for me, I knew the major and I also knew I was going to get my MBA.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
A lot of individuals are just focused on that 4 year and being done rather than that long-term plan. So I always had that long-term plan and I knew how I was going to support the business minor, the major in sports management, kinesiology. I was going to continue to build on that. So I think my route definitely helped me into who I am today, especially in the business world. But just a sports management major, a lot of people pigeonhole themselves thinking that, you know, hey, I just want to work in sports because I like football and basketball, but it's not. It's obviously not that
easy.
What
helped you develop the plan? Like how, because that's obviously, you know, you being in your early 20s at the time or being a teenager, I mean, that's very mature statement to make. Like, hey, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make my MBA and things will work out and I will do this because this is my desired career that I want to accomplish and I'll do everything to get there.
It was my parents that helped me figure out that 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20 year plan that I wrote down when I was 14 years old. So I'm very big on setting goals, milestone markers for myself, on knowing where I want to be. I never said I wanted to be the youngest NFL agent. I just said I wanted to be an NFL agent. Well, I surpassed my goal. But you know, there's those. It was just that long term framework and really being extremely passionate about something helped me succeed. I always say, you know, the day that I wake up and I can't be excited to go to work is the day I need to switch my career. And that was really similar, you know, early on, being a trainer, going to UT. I have to be passionate to really exert 110% towards something. And my parents kind of helped me framework what that short term and long term goals were, and writing it down and looking at it on a sheet of paper and saying, I have to do this to get to that next goal. And I was very fortunate to stay that course, because it's definitely not the majority of individuals are able to stay the course and not switch majors.
And I think it also speaks of some accountability measures that your parents kind of applied, and it helped you refine that plan and then, you know, stay consistent. That's amazing parental job. One question pertaining to, you know, something that you obviously mentioned is you became an NFL agent, and you said 39% people pass the test. Can you talk about that a little bit? Is the test something that is taking place annually, or there's, mm-hmm. you know, how can a young professional, doesn't matter with what background that they have, but they are so, they see all the money that is being made, and maybe that's their driver or another type of driver, but for whatever reason, they want to become an agent in NFL or NBA, but in this case, based on your experience, NFL, how was that? Can you talk about the process?
Yeah, so the process is an annual exam that's held in DC near where the NFL headquarters is. The pass rate, I think, over the past 5 years has always wavered anywhere from 39 to 47%. So definitely not the majority of people passing it. Yeah. The requirements are either a graduate degree or 7 years of negotiating experience. So it was a wide range of individuals. I was the youngest one in the room at the age of, I had just turned 25 at the time. And so the way I looked at it is almost everyone studied for about 5 to 6 months for this exam. The questions were not just true or false, fill in the blank, anything along those lines. It was one of those situations where they provided, you know, a player in San Francisco is making $1 million a year with a 33% tax, and they play in these cities getting taxed at this percentage, and then paying their agent 1.5% mm-hmm. and their financial advisor 1%.
Yeah.
How much is he bringing home at the end of the year? So it was very detailed. The numbers were close. It wasn't, you know, an easy plug-in answer. So that almost all the questions were multi-step to get to your end answer. It was a timed exam. Everyone was in all one room. There's only one opportunity to take the test. There's not makeups. It's pretty intense. But, you know, at the time, I think there were 1,200 agents in the industry, around 1,800 active players. And out of those 1,200 agents, about 750 of them had zero clients.
Oh, wow.
So it shows how top-heavy the agency industry is, and how competitive it is.
So what, once you get that license, and you're one of the fortunate ones, obviously, that did get license, how do you break the ice? You know, how can you it's not necessarily, you know, a resume builder. I mean, it could be treated as such, but I think if you want to obviously be successful, you got to get some clients. So
yeah.
What was your path kind of breaking that ice?
So this was a really defining part of my career. I had been with my previous agency for 6 years. Mm-hmm. The agent that I worked with had been in the industry over 25 years. And I had went from unpaid intern to events manager, where I was educating athletes about football, to then also running the marketing and PR divisions, all while getting my MBA. So I was multitasking, but I was 22, 23, 24. That was the time to put my head down and grind. I thought I would be with this agency forever. This agent wasn't going to be there long term. And I thought, oh, I'm walking into a pretty awesome opportunity. I've put in my time, et cetera. About a month, maybe 3 weeks before I took my agent exam, and I was finishing my MBA right around the same time, the agency said, we want you to stay in these two roles. You're doing fantastic. That same day, I left the agency with no plan. I just said, this is my last goal, but this was a big milestone for me from an early age, is to become an NFL agent. And I think they looked at me as a threat, even though I had put in all the time. I had the relationships with the players, and I was doing everything the right way. So that same day I left, and I had never planned to start my own agency. I took a few clients with me under an LLC, individual umbrella, and kept going. So at that time, I had four clients under representation, and it was kind of that fire underneath me. And I think that's the defining moment of a lot of individuals' career. And we've kind of talked a little bit about your background, is when your back is up against a wall, you just find a way to make it work.
Yeah.
And so when I looked at my four athlete clients, the way it works on the marketing side of the business is individuals will charge typically about 15 to 25% of the revenue they bring in. So it's commission, right?
Yeah, of course.
It's a commission. It's, you know, light underneath you.
Yeah.
Well, while I was producing these networking events for Life Beyond Football that we had trademarked to our agency, I met a lot of business owners outside of growing up in the high-end retail clothing business.
Yeah.
So I tried to utilize my marketing background and figure out how I can get reoccurring revenue that I can budget for starting a future agency. So I started looking at my network. I started looking at, you know, my portfolio. I had worked on one client for a handful of years underneath the agency with one other individual who is now my business partner. We both own 50-50, where we own 100% of our agency. He's the creative mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the strategic partnerships, vision, business side.
Yeah.
So we decided shortly thereafter, after leaving the agency, we were going to launch Revolving Mind Media, which is our agency we still have today. And our agency is split up of 50% athletes and 50% businesses. So, you know, to kind of go back full circle to answer your question, it was, I didn't have a plan. When I was becoming an agent, I thought I had a plan all along. But, you know, that was one of those defining moments. A curveball was thrown at me, and it's, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to sit and sulk that, you know, you're not with this huge, it was the second largest agency in the Southwest, it was an awesome opportunity, or am I going to keep chasing my dreams? And so that's what I did. We launched Revolving Mind Media, brought the athletes under that umbrella, and started working with business owners. And that's kind of what fueled our agency at that time and still to today.
And a couple questions,
yeah.
You know, around being an NFL agent and then obviously your agency. What's the difference, or how did you feel the difference is between an NFL agent that handles contracts versus the marketing representation? Because it is my understanding you transitioned to
Correct.
That path. Can you talk about that,
please? Yeah, so I was the youngest NFL agent for 2 years running. I had signed a couple guys. They got put on the practice squad. It's a dirty business. You know, when you're competing against these powerhouse agencies that have hundreds of millions of dollars backing, agents will pay players to sign with them. And I built my agency on the principle of helping individuals grow their brands, individual brands, personal brands, et cetera, along with kind of building that empire for themselves and enabling them as a CEO. A lot of these guys are just in it for a quick cash, quick check, even though they're going to make it up. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, these players, a lot of them don't look at themselves as the CEO of the business. I'm fortunate. That's kind of one of my principles on all the individuals that I work with. You know, I look at a lot of key characteristics. I look at promptness. If I set a meeting with an athlete client, they're going to be on time. They're going to look presentable for a professional meeting. So when I was the youngest NFL agent, I was going against these top dogs. And again, I wasn't going to waver from my principles on how I was going to help these individuals and athletes go through their journey. And then on top of that, they advise agents to not charge 3% of their contract, but lowering it to 1.5%. 3% was already the lowest among the four major sports in North America, and now they're lowering it to 1.5%. So when I took a step back, and you know, it was zero ego, right? I didn't need to have the NFL agent title to boost myself. I was doing it to grow a business. So when I took the business step back, and I was recruiting a $1 million player, to make $15,000.
Yeah.
I say only, but $15,000 isn't chump change. But in the big scheme of things, I was going to be traveling to visit with them. There were going to be added expenses. I was going to spend $8,000 to $10,000 meeting with him, getting to know his family, flying here, flying there, hotels, that at the end of the day, I was going to bring in $5,000 a year on said player. it wasn't a business move. So I turned my focus into focusing on six-figure endorsement deals, where now I'm charging 20%. It's a one-time video shoot, scheduling out social media posts. Not that it's easy money, by no means. There's no endorsement deal that's, you know, guaranteed, as well as a lot of football players just aren't as recognizable because of having a football helmet on. It was a hands down smart business move for me on focusing on the marketing side. So, you know, comparing the two, an NFL agent is negotiating against the Jerry Steven Joneses of the world for their contracts. And on the marketing side, I'm working on finding businesses and brands that align with my clients' visions, interests, and things along those lines to put together that portfolio around them and really build that long term wealth.
Can you share, you know, I don't want to touch any confidentiality or anything like that, but can you share some examples in terms of, you know, what's fascinating for me? And I think would love to talk about that a little bit more. You mentioned four major professional sports. I think I am biased. Yes, I played basketball, but I think basketball players have the best in NBA, the best, some of them have the best brands probably outside of the contracts that they sign, which are, you know, that's the most guarantees that they can sign in any sport, for outside of baseball, probably. But then their value also, for those that understand the branding marketing world, their value also skyrockets off the field, off the court, for in that particular case. Why do you think there is such a disparity between all those sports when it comes to contractual value for the players and then marketing value and building their brands?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think number one, I think it's the Players Association. The NFL's Player Association did not negotiate well against the owners. In the last bargaining agreement, they didn't negotiate for guaranteed contracts. I also think when you look at the financials, there's 53 players compared to 15 on an NBA roster. Correct. So it's easier, not easier, but it's easier to guarantee 15 players versus 53, even though football is a much more contact sport. On the marketing side, it goes back to a helmet on their head versus more recognizable. Yeah. When you're one of 15, not wearing a helmet, and you get to show your face, right? It's a lot easier to brand in commercials and know who a Kawhi Leonard is versus a safety on the Cowboys, right? Mm-hmm. They're not a skill position. They're not a sexy position. Yeah. That's fantasy football. It's a lot harder. So those are a couple of the distinguishing things. I think on the contract side, I feel personally there will be a holdout in the following next season due to the NFL and the NFL Players Association being so far apart. They're not even close right now. They want to expand the season, but they don't want to pay the players more. So it's a bad mentality that has been going on a long time on the ownership side on the NFL, rather than knowing I'm not bringing in revenue as the owner without the talent that's on the field. So it's going to be a heavily bargained thing on that side. And then again, it's a lot of the facial recognition on the marketing side. You also look at social media. That's a huge platform, obviously, for marketing purposes. And the following that these individuals in basketball have are in a different atmosphere than baseball. Football, it's not even comparable, right? It's tens of millions of followers compared to a good following for an NFL player's 500,000 on Instagram. So it's just two different ballparks. And I think those are a couple of the deciding or differences between the two.
As far as, you know, football players specifically, where I think you obviously have the most experience, what are some of the typical marketing agreements? Like where do you believe that a football player, regardless of the position, could make the most of their buck from the marketing, branding kind of, you know, standpoint, and how they can position themselves to really, you know, facilitate additional streams of revenue?
So to clarify, are you asking types of industries or how deals are structured?
No. Types of deals, marketing deals. What's the most appealing to them, or perhaps what are they're most exposed to?
So I would say the industry as a whole is typically sports training or recovery are kind of a couple of the main. There's obviously water companies, hydration, you know, different types of sports drinks and things along those lines. The way I structure deals, I think this is a little more interesting. So when I structure partnerships, I almost look at it through four different funnels. One of my biggest things that I'm always pushing for is equity. Mm-hmm. I look at that as the long-term wealth for mm-hmm. these athletes.
Absolutely.
There's a cash component, there's a charitable component, and then there's a product component. Mm-hmm. So those are typically four antennas on those types of industries that I'm diving into on behalf of athletes. But in the now, it's more on the sports training, recovery, focused on what their job is and how they can do even better at their job or take care of themselves.
No, it's insane to me how, I think the sport is truly becoming, or it already is, it's about taking care of yourself, taking care of your body. I see athletes having chefs and just staffs of people working around them to really, make sure that they're in top form, 24/7 almost, except for the off season. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine what type of, investments they have to make to facilitate that. But I was listening the other day to a podcast with our only Polish NBA player that I think might be near retirement, Marcin Gortat. He was with the Clippers, and he was talking about all this stuff, how he had a chef and how he had all this. When he goes to Poland, he has all these different marketing agreements with different firms that he doesn't even have to really worry about anything. His brand is, at this point, so large that all he wants to do is just focus on the kids, the community. He has a charitable foundation. So I think, similar to what you describe, he took advantage and was very smart about his time off the field and probably had the right people around him to facilitate that for him.
100%.
How has that been working out for you? I don't know if you can share some examples of your clients or the deals, perhaps. I want you to share, hopefully, some of the things you've accomplished, a great level of success recently with one of your players. I'll kind of leave the floor to you to elaborate as much as you want.
Yeah. So my biggest thing is I will never create a partnership unless the player's passionate about the business. It's a core value of mine. When I first got into the industry, I had an opportunity with Coca-Cola and one of my Dallas Cowboys players. They wanted this individual. Well, he didn't drink soda. He didn't drink Coke.
Yeah.
So even though it would have been a fantastic cash grab opportunity, it wouldn't have been a long-term partnership. So I found someone at about half the rate, and it ended up being a 4.5-year deal partnership.
Wow.
So I always stuck with that as kind of my core value. I'll use one of my clients that we've created a lot of partnerships who's always focused on long-term wealth is Jalen Smith of the Cowboys. He's all about diversifying himself, and he's also all about not following what other individuals are doing in the industry. So, for example, the Cowboys' water partner is Deja Blue. Yeah. We work with Essentia.
Yeah.
Most people say, I'm going to Uber here. Our partnership's with Lyft.
Yes.
So it's not following what everyone else is doing. One of the cooler partnerships that I've created are, and again, this is kind of how my company is structured, is we represent businesses, brands, and then the athletes. Mm-hmm. Well, we started, we moved into an office 2 doors down from Lyft with just the potential of building a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Built the relationship with them. They told me they have an interest in working at the NFL draft that was here last April in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Well, Uber has exclusive rights inside AT&T Stadium.
Interesting.
So they said, pitch me on an idea on how we can do and work with the NFL draft. I said, well, what if we chose a couple Dallas Cowboys players as the preferred ride, the Dallas Cowboys preferred ride to the draft? Being Lyft, it's more applicable. It's more realistic. You're not taking an Uber around this when you're in the stadium. Yeah. So the preferred ride to the draft was Lyft. It was their best producing campaign they've ran. They had coupon redemption. It was a fantastic launch video. The impressions that we got, my agency ran the PR behind the campaign. We had every local news station pick up the story. Jalen Smith was the partner with Lyft. And we're now in talks for another year partnership, more focused on the charitable side than on the conversion side. So a little bit thinking outside of the box and getting creative is marketing, right? There is no one book that you can read that says this is how you market. It's just getting creative and, thinking what can be done. Another one, I'm going to stay on Jalen just for our story, is he's all about, you know, he had a devastating injury in college. A lot of teams took them off. Off the draft board and said, you know, you're probably never going to play again. Well, the Cowboys took that second round risk. So he's all about recovery. So one of our clients that we started running LinkedIn and national PR for is the fastest growing cryotherapy business in the country by the name of iCryo. So we started talking about, you know, how can Jalen, you know, become a brand ambassador? Well, that was kind of dull, right? Like, everyone can be a brand ambassador, but how do you show that true authenticity?
Yes.
It's getting him behind the entire brand, not just one store or anything along those lines. We're going to be having some exciting openings coming up. We're going to be expanding to the Dallas Metroplex in the near future. But we got a partnership focused on an overall branding equity deal over the entire company so he can help grow it now and into the future. He will be opening up his own stores. It's something he believes in upon his recovery to become that, you know, future Pro Bowler. You know, he was named to NFL Top 100. He exemplifies what building your business and being a CEO is all about. He owns equity in over 10 businesses now. At the age of 24, he's built his own management firm that he is an owner in. And he has helped me even look within my agency on how we are built. Everything that he does and puts around him are finding the experts in their field. I stay in my lane. What's my expertise? It's marketing and business relationships. Yeah. He has his own social media coordinator. He has his own business manager. He has his own chef. Like, he has his own people in place, and they're the experts in their field. So when I was building my agency, and a lot of marketing agencies do this, is they just bring in an account manager and give them different responsibilities. I find the best SEO guy. I find the best PR guy, social media, et cetera. And I don't do any account managers. So, you know, kind of going full circle on some of the partnerships, it's Jalen with Lyft. It's Jalen with iCryo. I work with the backup safety, Kayvon Frazier of the Cowboys, and Anthony Brown, the starting slot corner. We created partnerships with Power Hands, a sports training goods company, to increase hand, arm strength, dexterity. So it's finding what their passion is: recovery, transportation, training. And I go after those businesses. I typically look for a lot of businesses that are on the up and up, rather than going for those big top dogs, the Gatorades of the world. I try and find the drink body armors, the Essential Waters, that are trying to grow to get to that level, but are not there yet. And what better way to grow than with a Dallas Cowboys player or you know, any of my other clients around the league. So that's a couple of the more recent partnerships that I've executed with smaller businesses, but also the Lyft Transportations and the big businesses around the country.
Sounds like it's a very comprehensive model where you successfully really take care of all the parties. I mean, it's not like what a amazing kind of summary, because you take, obviously you have a client in Jalen or someone else. You're a representation, obviously, as a co-founder of your media company, but then you look out for the best interest of the brand that is on the rise. So it all, like you said, comes in full circle, but you have to have conscious understanding of how that works, because in a lot of cases, to your point, the agent will sometimes just look, hey, my client, what's this money, and that's it, and it becomes a financial, it's kind of like in financial services, you know, it's a transaction as opposed to, you know, true a relationship built based on, you know, values, beliefs, and objectives of that business owner.
Yeah, one of my first conversations with, whether it's the athlete side or the business side, is what are your goals? I got to know what your goal is to make sure I pass it up, I succeed, right? So that's one of my initial conversations every time, is understanding what the goals and objectives of a campaign are, and then understanding, you know, how we can build on that, right? So, you know, we do breakdown analysis of campaigns afterwards. And there's a reason everyone that works with said players want to come back for more, right? It's really a building block of foundations on understanding what that goal is and how we hit it, whether it's impressions, whether it's clicks to the website, whether it's sales. You know, my biggest thing when I talk to any client is, if they're spending a dollar with me, how am I bringing them three or four? Right. That's my number one goal is, and that comes from my background on the business and sales side, is understanding how we can reach goals together. Because my agency is nothing if I'm not making my business clients revenue, right? That's what it is all at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Even businesses that are looking for branding and exposure, you still got to bring in revenue. So that's something that I really focus on a day to day. Even within when I built Revolving Mind Media, I looked at all my relationships with the Life Beyond Football events that I was doing. And I was always focused on getting the businesses in front of the players, which they paid to attend, following the event. It was the full follow through. It wasn't the thanks for your sponsorship, you got to pitch these players, see you later. Almost all of those businesses are now a client of mine because I did everything the right way and built on that. So again, that's kind of a core value is, you know, how do I keep a good name? How does Revolving Mind Media stay, you know, top dog, relevant in the very competitive industry? Absolutely. And it's really just handling business the right way, yeah. Being authentic, being real, getting creative with partnerships. Too many times these agents, and even in these contract negotiations that we kind of see taking place in the Dallas area, a lot of these agents are focused on their cut. It's not trying to work something that works for everyone. It's a little more, how can I make my 1.5%? How can I maximize my 1.5%? When in reality, it's all about your client. It's all about the player who needs to be this acting CEO of the business.
That 1.5% is astonishing. I think NBA has 10%, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 5%.
It's as low as 4%.
Really? Okay.
As low as 4%.
Yeah, I've heard different numbers, but it's crazy. I mean, the contracts are nowhere near as big, and 1.5% of guarantees or of the total value?
Of the money they bring in. So the guaranteed money.
The guaranteed
money. So obviously in football, it's non-guaranteed, so they're focused on as much guaranteed as possible. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's why it's a lot of up-and-coming agents can't make it in the agency game without either being funded, without having that big-time client, because it's hard to make it.
For sure. I want to ask you a question outside of work. You know, what keeps you busy? What you like to do for fun? I know Revolving Mind Media and what you the work that you do for the players and focus on the business is top priority. But what do you like to do for fun? What keeps you busy outside of work?
Yeah, so I work as hard as I do to see the world. Recently got engaged a couple months ago. My fiance, thank you. My fiance is a big travel nut, just like me. Yeah. Even if we're doing a quick Friday night, Sunday morning, quick trips, we try and explore as much as we can and pin our map that we have in our office of different places we've gone together. Recently got a puppy as well. I grew That's up awesome. With dogs. So, you know, it's nice. It's the one person that I have around me that will never talk back to me, no matter, and is always happy to see me. So I can't say that about everyone. So, I'm taking care of our puppy. We work hard to travel. I love to play sports, just like little pickup games, run around my neighborhood. And really, I'm always there for my family. So when I'm not working, I'm trying to help them out. My brother's still in school, so I'm helping him get to that degree. My dad's always trying to do something different, launch new businesses. He just hit his 20th year in the fine apparel business. So always just trying to help out those around me outside of Revolving Mind Media. But it's definitely not a 9-to-5. My days typically start around 5:30 or 6 every day. And who knows when they end. So but I also force myself to have those checkout times. And that's part of the traveling component of my life, is an offset. That's the craziness of the day-to-day, because it does get exhausting. I'm not just talking about one industry all day, right? I'm going from cryotherapy to wine to transportation to ATVs to cosmetics. Like, I'm having different conversations all throughout every single day to the football field, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I always got to be on, right? I can't be 80% when talking to clients or potential clients. It's an always on mentality. And everyone knows they can always reach me at all times. So it's hard to do that check outside, but I would definitely say that travel mixed with getting married next year, mixed with family and puppy, definitely keep me busy.
That's exciting, man. I'm very happy for you. Thank you. To pick your brain on some of the current contract negotiations that are going on with Dallas. I know this episode will probably air, hopefully after some of those will come to fruition and an agreement. But, you know, can you touch on, let's say, you know, like, so I guess who is, obviously we have Dak and Zeke that are outstanding to sign. And there's a whole, this big line of players that have contracts and want to be renewed, obviously. You know, what is your opinion on what's going on and perhaps what should we expect next or the most the signee that will be next, I guess, for the Cowboys franchise?
So I think the Cowboys look at those individuals that are putting in work. They're showing up there every day. They're leaders within the organization. They are all about rewarding the guys that are handling business the right way, showing up day in and day out. It's the Jalen Smiths that got the contract. It's the Lyle Collins that got signed.
Just got announced today. I was very pleased.
Just got announced.
But we have, I'm not that knowledgeable about football, again, basketball all day long, but that's our offensive lineman, right? So it seems like they're really taking care of that protection.
We have two guys, Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins, and Travis Frederick and Zach Martin,
yeah.
Two of them are signed till 2023. The other two are signed till 2024. Yeah. The line is not going anywhere, and it's the foundational, it's the not sexy position, but the team does not run, right, without offensive line as the building block. So I look at those guys that show up day in and day out, they get rewarded. They got really, really good deals. I think the Cowboys organization in regards to Zeke, I personally think the contract will get done in the next 24 hours from today. But they don't want to do the deal, in my opinion, but they know what a critical component they got to be able to run the ball. And if it's not him, it's a rookie. He's been doing well, but he's not proven. So they're going to budge. They're going to get Zeke there. They know this is the best team they've had in the past decade, hands down. Mm-hmm. They believe this is their year to make a Super Bowl run, and they don't want one individual, whether it's right or wrong, to mess up their big plan, right? There's a total of 63 guys on the roster, 10 practice squad, 53 active. But that one individual is a huge component to the team. So I see them getting Zeke signed. The other two, Dak and Amari, those are the two other individuals that are kind of top of priority for them. They're the skill position. Byron Jones is also a free agent. My client, Anthony Brown, is also going to be a free agent next year. They got a handful of guys that are going to be up for a new contract. And, you know, Jerry's phrase is it's the piece of the pie. There's only so much pie that people can eat. And now with Jalen and Lyle Collins getting signed, money is getting eaten up. You know, the way I think Dak plays out is I think he's going to play out this contract under this year, and then the Cowboys will put a franchise tag on him next year, which is an average one-year salary of the top five at that position, which I think is a good deal. He's asking for number one out of all quarterbacks right now. Even being a Dallas homer, he's not the number one quarterback, and he's not the number five in the league, right? He is a good game manager. He wins games, but he's not fully moving the needle. So I think the Cowboys are hesitant to guaranteeing him over $100 million for someone that's not proven. The Zeke deal is not going to be as heavily guaranteed as people think. They're going to be able to get out of the contract in probably 3 years from when it's signed. So even though the numbers will be, you know, fluctuate, it'll be, you know, look larger than it is, when you dive into the numbers, it's kind of like when Tony Romo signed a 6-year, $120 million deal, 60 guaranteed. So it was $20 million a year, years, and then they could have gotten out of it. So I think it's going to be a similar situation where Zeke will sign somewhere probably around 6 years, $90 million, half of it guaranteed or something like that, where they can get out of it.
Interesting. Yeah, I've always I'm trying to watch. I mean, there's only so much you can do from a, you know, outsider's perspective. The ESPN, the Bleachers
Report. And it's a lot of guessing. A lot of these guys are getting fed information from the Cowboys organization, getting fed by Zeke Elliott's representation. And they're playing like a game, like Jerry Jones on the radio every day.
It's like a show almost.
It is.
It's really...
It'd be a great reality show.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. Zeke... love that they're running back. I just what I cannot understand is that the fact that it's not like you're out of the contract. You have two years on a deal, and it's like having a job, any job. Like what are you gonna say? Well, I'm a full time employee, but I want this, and if not, I'm gonna hold out and I'm gonna stay at home. Like
it's a little childish, yeah. And it's him not being the CEO of his business, and it's being other individuals in his ear advising him what to do, whether it's right or wrong. I don't agree that his negotiating move is the right way, but who am I to say if that deal gets done today, right? Like,
well,
if
he has leverage. Certainly.
He has leverage. He knows how important he strategically waited until now to hold out. Right, he was in off-season workouts in March and April, and nothing was brought up. They waited to see who they drafted. They waited to see if you remove me from the equation, what does this offense look like? And they know they've invested so much in offensive line.
You gotta have someone
there. So even though I don't necessarily agree with it, if and when he gets that deal, he technically won. Yeah. Right, he got the deal that he wanted, whether it was the right way or not.
No, I got you. Yeah, I hope. You know, everything will work out from the Cowboys' perspective. Obviously, it's been a long time, and I think fans are just starving for success, starving for some even NFC Championship or for a Super Bowl for that matter. Obviously,
I agree.
And I just live through that, you know, as a foreigner, you know, I'm like, damn, this is really, it's like religion in the United States.
Especially in Texas.
Yeah, and I've already have come to that conclusion long time ago, but it's interesting to just watch this, you know, as an outsider and how everything unfolds and the contracts and whatnot. I have a bigger joy watching basketball and the drama there because I know all the guys and I've just been a fan for a long time, right?
So can I flip the script? Of course. knowing basketball and being passionate about basketball, what are your thoughts on how dominant one team has been and the parity across all of the NBA has not been good over the past years compared to, even though the Patriots are always top dog, there's always a new team in the right, Rams last year, Eagles before. I feel like the parity in the NFL is better than the parity in the NBA up until this year, where now there's quote unquote not a super team, but a lot of teams with two star players. I'm curious on your thoughts on that.
You caught me off guard.
You thought you were only talking to me.
No, I got you. You know, it's. I was born in '87. I grew up watching Jordan. I grew up, watching Shaq. Then Kobe, then LeBron, then D Wade, all these guys. And at the end of the day, those teams were never like super teams. You know, everything was based on the concept of building a team and drafting the right guys and doing stuff to complement those pieces around them with what you had, depending on the salary cap. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Golden State, I mean, the majority of the guys that they had, they're drafted. You know, it's a genius on a general manager side and their ownership that they were able to pull that off, and then get some pieces. Like Iguodala, who is no longer there, but has been for many years, and then they got KD for a couple years. They've always, they had a big man, they had Bogut, they had, what's his name?
JaVale McGee.
JaVale McGee and
Cousins.
Cousins that from Georgia.
Zaza Pachulia.
These guys.
You think I'm good at just football, but I kind of know my basketball too.
Of course. Yeah. So I was blanking on the name, but they've always had this model of, playing smart basketball, a lot of great shooters, obviously ball handlers, but tough big man rebounders that set good screens, that understand the game, that are okay to sacrifice their ego for the benefit of their you know, scoring machines. Mm-hmm. Do I think that serves the sport well? No. I wish the league was more competitive. I think it will be this year, okay, finally. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, with all the injuries, which you don't wish upon anyone, but, you know, KD will sit out a year pretty much for sure. He's with the Nets now. Clay will be, you know, out at least until playoffs, if not for the whole season. I mean, they held out Porzingis the whole year for precautionary measures. And I think Golden State will do the same, given that they gave him a max, not to risk certain things. So it's very interesting. I look forward to a competitive season where it's really wide open. The league is wide open. I think Eastern Conference, I mean, Toronto is no longer a favorite. I think you got Boston, Philly in the mix. Milwaukee will certainly make a push. And on the West Coast, I mean, Clippers are going to be, I think, a defensive bully. I mean, they have some great pieces on the defensive end, and obviously cornerstone with Rivers. And I think LA, if Lakers, if people will follow Davis and LeBron, things will look great, I think. It will take them a while to glue pieces, but I think they will be a very competitive playoff team. Houston, obviously, with Westbrook, I mean, it's the league, it looks so much different. But you see the money that is thrown on those tables. It's just from a contractual perspective.
What about your local team? What about your boy Porzingis and Doncic? Well, what about that two-headed monster?
I think, so here's what I believe about Dallas. By the way, Dirk, I grew up watching the guy. I mean, I went to his last game. I had tears in my eyes. It was crazy when all these, you know, all the five mm-hmm. Hall of Famers came out. But I think Dallas is a sleeper. People will underestimate what the team can do this year. I think, is it a championship team right now? No. But I think they can
seventh or eighth seed, maybe.
I would say 5-8, okay, somewhere, nice, depending on how their season goes. If Porzingis stays healthy, if he glues well with Luka, and then they have, you know, other pieces around them, obviously, but we need some major, you know, we need some movements mm-hmm. around free agency when the trade deadline comes around. For whatever reason, Dallas is not a destination. I'm shocked that it's not a destination, given those two young guys could be here for 10 years. So sure. I hope now it will change. And from a you know, business perspective, I mean, it's one of the best metroplexes in the country. You know, no state tax. I think, and this is your language, but you know, you look at it, the earnings players make. I mean, it's insane what you can make in Texas versus California.
For sure, yeah. And, you know, hopefully I make the cut to come back on the podcast, but yeah. I recently moved into the NBA market.
Oh, you did?
So over the past 10 years, I was exclusively NFL. Yeah. About a month ago, I moved into the guy who pretty much shaped out the league to make sure it was an even destination and didn't go to the Lakers and ended up in the Clippers. So he is my newest client. So I hope to have some good stories for you next time. That's awesome. Is a next time that I'm
with
on.
The Clippers, who did they? I know.
Who is their biggest signing?
Oh my God, Dwight?
No, the Clippers' biggest signing.
No, Dwight went with the Clippers. Kawhi?
Dwight went to the Kawhi.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
So it was interesting with him is he really stripped down all his partnerships and only had New Balance. And now once he moved to LA, I had been in talks with his agent for about 4 years. So even going back to to the Spurs. And so when he left, when he was in San Antonio and leaving, he stripped all partnerships except New Balance. And now that he's in a big market, he's ready to create those like-minded partnerships.
I didn't know that, man. Congrats.
Thank you.
That's freaking, you know, not only worth applause, but I think, you know, I'm getting the two teams twisted, completely forgot, you know, Dwight. I'm thinking Gortat because he was going to sign with the Lakers,
right?
But he wasn't willing to accept the veteran minimum. Well, he was going to if it was guaranteed, and they wanted to give him a contract because it came down to Dwight and
Gortat. Interesting.
They had like 7 or 8 players, and you know, that's what it came down to, but you know, Clippers will be a force, and obviously Leonard and George, and that's amazing, man.
Thank you.
You're getting into this market, and I think this is referral. Like, I mean, you see the players, see what you do with the players, they refer. I mean,
that's exactly how it happened. It was that we started getting seen on some of these large partnerships and saw what I was capable of doing. So said, let's go.
Well, don't forget about us little people. Man. For sure. When you go places, you know, when the Clippers on the or the Lakers come to town, I mean, it's
I'll let you play the pickup game over myself.
Whatever, man. But I want to be respectful to your time. I'm very thankful that you came out. You know, I mean, we are pretty much the same age, and what you already accomplished, it's definitely commendable to say the least. You know, the work ethic, the dedication that you have, the level of authenticity, and just, you know, not getting caught up with the drama, but actually focusing on the best interest for all the parties involved in the business. I think this is helping you dramatically get to the place where you are today and on. So
thank you.
And credit to your parents, obviously, for everything that they've done. But I'm looking forward to see, you know, where the revolving Mind Media will stop next.
It's not stopping. What airport?
Because you're, you know.
There we go.
It's fun to follow you on social media and obviously your clients. So again, appreciate your time, my man. And you know, looking forward to our next get together soon.
Thank you so much for having me. And if anyone listening to this has questions on the sports industry, I'm obviously happy to make myself available. So feel free to share my social media.
Absolutely.
And have anyone reach out with any questions. Absolutely. In the industry or beyond.
Aaron Zach, make sure you add him on LinkedIn and you know, other social media and follow him. And I'll make sure to drop some links as well.
Awesome. So, thank you so much, Tomas.
Cheers.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Aaron Zach. At your convenience, please go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts on your mobile device and leave me a review. It would truly mean the world. And I'll talk to you in the next episode of The Tomas Show. Cheers.